You are listening to another edition of The Block Report with the Minister of Information, JR, on Hard Knock Radio. Today, our guest is Bilal Shatila. He is a California licensed attorney. He is also Lebanese American, and you can catch his analysis of what's going on at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. You can catch it on his YouTube channel, Legal Guru. Bilal, how you doing, man?
Yes, sir. Mr. JR, thank you for having me. Long time no talk.
Yes, sir. I've been watching some of your posts on Instagram, and you've been commenting on South Africa bringing Israel to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. And what is the significance of South Africa in particular bringing these charges of genocide to Israel?
There's a lot of significance to it. Number one, I mean, they are well versed on genocide, obviously, given their history. But notably, they're an African country that stepped up when, you know, pretty much all of the Arab countries didn't. And I think they're the most qualified to bring these charges. Now, obviously, other countries have since signed on to the application at the ICJ. But yeah, I think they're the most qualified, most articulate, well-versed. And the fact that they're bringing it carries more weight in the legal realm.
South Africa's calls of genocide are being supported by over two dozen countries, and not one country with the white majority is supporting them, last time I checked. What are your thoughts on that?
So I try to separate the law and the rule of law with politics, but they're so very intertwined. And obviously identity politics goes into that. And more specifically, you know, just the racist sort of white power structure that exists globally has, you know, made its way into it. I can't say it made its way into, because from the outset, you know, the laws and the conventions and the treatises and everything that comprises international law, and even obviously domestically in the U.S., is built off of this idea of whiteness as a sort of a superiority. And when you have a foundation like that, you see it play out in ways like this, where, you know, one example I was talking earlier with a friend is how over 90% of the International Criminal Court defendants are black or brown. You know, you don't see any white people at the ICC. And in this case, we have Israel, you know, tries to pass itself off as a secular, you know, white society in the Middle East. And they are at the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, which is separate from the International Criminal Court. It's a very tough question to answer, and there's so many layers to it. But at the end of the day, you know, the way I try to describe it is, let's say when we're looking at discrimination, you can have outright discrimination where, say, an employer specifically targets you based on a protected class like your race, your gender, your ethnicity, your national orientation, sexual orientation, etc. You can have that type of discrimination. But then there's another type of discrimination that's called disparate impact. And this basically shows you the results. The results are not balanced. They're disproportionate. So when you have disproportionate results like that, in the law, you can infer that there was racism involved in this particular, you know, let's say a company's not hiring people of color. Well, you don't have to look at their hiring practices or policies. You just have to look to the fact that they don't have any people of color that are otherwise qualified to be their employees. I kind of try to make that analogy to at the international stage, where you see clear genocide taking place, no question about it, and you have this court case and you have the defendant Israel not only having the audacity to come into court and deny these allegations, but you also have the U.S. and other, and in the U.K. and France and Germany kind of backing Israel no matter what. There's nothing that they can do that the white global power structure will not back. It seems obviously. I mean, they're just slaughtering people. So what else is there to do? There's no level of depravity left to be condemned, you know, if they haven't done it this far. So, yeah, this is a very, very deep topic that obviously we can get into for hours. But what I try to do, JR, is basically break things down in a digestible manner that isn't too heavy on the legalese, try to put things into layman's terms. And I think I do a good job because, you know, I just posted my first TikTok video last week and it got over 600,000 hits. And everyone in the comment section is like, you know, saying, we appreciate this. You know, I learned something new. You know, this explanation was very good for me to understand. Because lawyers, like doctors, tend to kind of get caught up in the legal world and assume that our listeners know things that they obviously don't. Because, right, you know, they didn't go to law school. They're not trained in law. So
I wanted to ask you, you threw something in there. You said this is not the International Criminal Court. This is the International Court of Justice. What is the difference? And if they're both based at The Hague, what are the ramifications of this verdict on Israel?
To be fair, the ICJ is looking at Israel as a state. The ICC will look, if it gets there, I hope it does, but will look more specifically at individual persons to criminally charge, like Netanyahu, you know, like the Minister of Defense, like, you know, all these major figures within Israel that have come out and called for a genocide. It could even be soldiers. So that's what the ICC will look at. I think South Africa's decision to file in the ICJ is a good strategic one because it gives South Africa and the world really an opportunity to put forth evidence and observe it and weigh testimony, you know, at least preliminarily to get a better idea of, you know, what a criminal prosecution might look like.
So if Israel is convicted of genocide, I mean, are there any legal ramifications against the state? Are there sanctions? I mean,
You know, it's complicated, but I'll try to answer it like this. Right now, they're looking at what's called provisional measures. That's what the ICJ is looking at. The whole case is going to take a couple of years. But just this portion for what's called provisional measures, this is seeking a immediate order from the ICJ that tells Israel to cease and desist this genocide. But what the messed up part, and this is a bureaucrat, this is by design, basically. Messed up part is that order that the ICJ will issue, hopefully, will go to the UN Security Council. The UN Security Council has sole enforcement. So they're the only international body that can actually enforce an order from the ICJ. This is historically how it's been. This is according to the Geneva Convention. This is just how it is, okay? The U.S. and four other superpowers have veto power. So they can veto the decision. They can say, okay, we're not going to enforce this. Go, you know, what are you going to do? We can't do nothing about it. So if the U.S. does decide that we're going to veto this, which, you know, a lot of people are anticipating, I'm more hopeful than that. I think this would be insane for the U.S. to veto because, obviously, at the international stage, the U.S. holds itself out as this beacon of justice and, you know, as the premier democratic society in the world. And, you know, so it would be insane if we saw a veto. And obviously we did see a veto under similar circumstances in Nicaragua. But the U.S. has been pretty consistent with not vetoing such orders. So I'm hopeful that they don't. But if they do, then we're back to square one. The main point here is that it's been 103 days of this genocide on the Palestinians, committed very blatantly by Israel, and we need an immediate solution. And when the courts are not effective, when other powers, strong military powers are not effective and are, in fact, choosing to side with Israel, that's when you're going to see, you know, militant groups. That's when you're going to see people fending for themselves because no one else is going to protect them. Every system has failed them. So if every system fails you, you have no choice. You have no choice but to pick up arms, but to do whatever you can, whatever it is, even if you're going on social media, whatever you can. Like for us as American citizens, and by the way, most citizens of all of these places, even Germany, I'm talking to German citizens, and you know, even in Israel, obviously, you can see their protests almost every day now, and people getting thrown into solitary confinement over it. Citizens all over the world don't reflect their governments. Now, their governments are the one obviously making these decisions, so it's causing all of these reverberations on behalf of entire nations that don't even agree. It's just such a limited pool of individual people that are making these decisions that makes this even, you know, adds another layer of complexity to it. But basically, if the ICJ does issue an order and the U.S. vetoes it, then you're going to see, I mean, basically that'll be the end. In my opinion, that'll be totally delegitimizing the international court. There will be no, you know, at the post-World War II, you know, world order. All of that goes out the window because that would just set such a bad precedent that it would be met with so much resistance that I don't see it overcoming that.
Do you think that this is an important case that will affect the legitimacy of the international criminal courts due to the fact that, as you said, the Global South have been the ones that have been prosecuted the most under it? It was world renowned because of the Nuremberg trials, but we haven't seen anything of that size coming from a European country. There have been no charges. So if Israel gets out of this somehow, how do you feel this will affect the legitimacy of international law?
It would be toast. It would be toast. And I don't even think the conversation will get to, you know, the international court, I think, will be totally delegitimized. So will the U.S. You know, so will these Western powers, including the U.K., including France, including Germany, and obviously Israel. You're going to see a level of resistance that I don't even think these global leaders anticipate. People are making connections from all over the world now. There's social media. You know, as limited as it is and as quickly as you can get shadow banned, we're still being able to get our messages across and connect with one another. As far as citizens are concerned, as far as nations are concerned, as far as races and ethnicities and religions are concerned. So how are you going to stop that? I think these global elites are completely miscalculating all of this. I really do. And it's a level, and when you hear them talk and when you listen to the tone of their voices, it's so arrogant and so, you know, just callous with such depravity. They don't care. So, you know, I wish obviously they would see, you know, things the way I see them and the way a lot of, you know, regular people see them, but they don't. They're just so blinded by their power. They're blinded by this world and the power that they think that they perceive they have over it.
We were talking a little bit about the U.S. You were saying that you don't think that the U.S. would veto the International Court of Justice's verdict if it came to the Security Council to enforce it. But looking at the fact that the U.S. is the biggest sponsor of Israel and has been for a long time or since its inception, do you think that that will play a part because it will protect its global partner?
It's not even a global partner, JR. It is, you can't look at the U.S. as a, oh, Israel is the U.S.'s ally. No, no. Israel completely has the U.S. at every level you look at, completely gripped. They're at their mercy. And I don't know how they got them to this point. But they do, and what's Okay, so there's two really interesting things happening right now. Number one, white people are starting to see it. Regular, plain Jane white people in the U.S., in the South, all over, are starting to be like, wait a minute. You know, we don't support Israel. Why are we giving all this money to Israel? I'm a poor white man in America, and you're sending my money off to the Middle East, and they get free education, free health care, free this, free that. So that's really interesting that white people are waking up to it, because, like, obviously people of color are like, yeah, we've been on this. But white people waking up to it, it's like, whoa, it's a new day. So that's number one. Number two, if it gets to the Security Council and there's so much political pressure and the U.S. just, you know, they can't veto it. They just can't. It would just destroy everything. So it doesn't get vetoed. It goes through. But one of the remedies, you know, obviously it's always peacekeeping. The ICJ always wants to have peacekeeping remedies available. But where peacekeeping remedies have been rejected or are otherwise not available, what a lot of people don't know is that the Security Council can put forth military force to prevent military harm. So if one country is causing military harm, like, you know, you saw in Qatar, I forget which year it was, but military force was authorized to prevent that, and it worked. So in this case, you know, where you have Netanyahu just yesterday coming out and saying, oh, well, whatever, we're not following anybody's order, and we're going to do what we want, that should call for military force to come down and prevent that. The problem is, you know, none of these superpowers are going to want to actually use their military to bomb, you know, their ally, essentially. So what I think will happen is one of two things. Either a coalition is going to come together, a coalition of smaller countries that might include Russia, might include China, I don't know, that actually can use their military. I mean, it's not otherwise illegal that if they weren't, you know, part of the Security Council that had to use their military force, if it's an outside power that came together and to use their military force to enforce an ICJ order, then I think that would be legitimate. So you have that, but you also have these militias that are being, you know, they're getting propped up and they're, you know, ready to defend them, their land. They're ready to defend the Palestinians. You got people ready for whatever, ready to die, ready to jump into the Red Sea. That's right now. So imagine if the ICJ does say, okay, we got to stop this. That kind of gives everybody the green light to do, you know, literally, like Malcolm said, by any means necessary to stop them. And it would, you know, theoretically be legitimate even under international law. It's the same as the self-defense argument, but, you know, if I'm standing with you and somebody punches you in the face, I have the right to defend you. You know,
right?
The same, your right to defend yourself also extends to me. If I'm your friend or I'm your family member and I'm standing there next to you, I can do that. So this is kind of the same concept, but, you know, this is a lot of ifs and buts. So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. It ain't looking good. Iran is sending ballistic missiles over 1,200 kilometers away now. They got nuclear powers. Israel's crazy ass has nuclear powers too. So obviously de-escalation is needed, but when you've mixed in so much, just there's so much mixed in the pot that it's just, as much as I want to say, like, yeah, we obviously need to de-escalate, you have an aggressor that is a complete lunatic in Israel. And they're such fanatics that they'll just blow the whole world up. And they have nuclear capabilities. And the U.S., if the U.S. was an independent sovereign nation, you know, that wasn't controlled by Israel, they would have been stopped this. So,
as we're seeing with the Epstein case, who some say are hooked to Mossad, when we are talking about the influence that Israel has over U.S. politics, I mean, do you see a correlation between the power that Israel has over, say, the U.S. government and, say, the list of politicians in particular that were linked to the Epstein case, as well as him being rumored to be connected to Israeli intelligence?
My position on that is we don't need to dig too far deep into that theory. We just kind of have to infer that Israel has dominance, not just power, but dominance over media, Hollywood, finance, politics with AIPAC, which is the biggest organization in the U.S. for dark money flows through to these politicians. So they just have such a grip. They have such a grip on the U.S. across all sectors. Let me tell you a crazy story, JR. When I was about 20 years old, there used to be a Detroit-based clothing brand called El Wissam. You could look them up. I used to buy them. They used to have a $500-$600 leather jacket with the fur. It was just every season, as nice as jacket, you know. Anyway, one year, and I know the owner personally, a Mossad agent literally came up to him and said, listen, your brand is doing really well. It's growing. This, it's that. You need to donate some money to Israel, and we'll just, you know, we'll help you, basically. And he said, absolutely not. Within months, his shipments were getting stopped in New York. His materials were getting redirected. And now, you know, they're just a small operation still. They were never able to expand. So it's just that type of behavior that Israel and Israelis and Zionists are known for. They play the dirtiest games you could possibly imagine. They will blackmail you, you know. There's no such thing as fair play, which is evident in their national fighting style, which is Krav Maga. Krav Maga is just the least fair fight that you can get into. You know, there are no rules with these people. There are no rules. Anything goes. Any manipulation tactic, any blackmailing, any advantage, anything goes. There are no rules. But they expect everybody to abide by the rules when it comes to anybody who's not them, obviously.
We're running out of time. That was the voice of Bilal Shatila. He is a California licensed attorney, a Lebanese American, and also he is the commentator and the founder of Legal Guru, the Legal Guru channel on YouTube. How else can people stay in touch with you?
TikTok, Instagram, Legal Guru, LegalGuru.biz. That's pretty much it.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on with us, man. I appreciate your expertise, Bilal. And, you know, this is the first of hopefully many.
Of course.
All right.
Of course. Thank you for having me, JR. And to your listeners, try to not to despair. Try to stay positive. Try not to let the chaos get to you. And really take time to educate yourself. This is the most important time, in my opinion, to be educated on what's going on. And you can learn quickly. International law is not that complex. You can learn quickly. So thank you for having me again, JR.
Right on, man. Thank you. All right. Talk to you soon, man.
Absolutely.
All right. Peace.
All right.
You were just listening to the voice of Bilal Shatila, a California Lebanese American licensed attorney who runs the Legal Guru channel, and he analyzes what's going on with the war in Israel. I am the People's Minister of Information, JR, signing off for Block Report Radio. You can get more at Block Report Official on Instagram. Until next time, we out.